Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Clay Johnson to the broadcast. Clay is the Executive Vice President of Global Business Services and Chief Information Officer of Walmart, a company that is both the world's largest employer with 2.3 million employees and the world's largest company by revenue with approximately $480 billion in revenue in 2016. Since joining Walmart this past January, Clay has led a global team of over 10,000 people focused on driving operational efficiencies, lowering costs, and accelerating growth. Prior to Walmart, Clay was the Chief Information Officer at General Electric Power. While at GE, Clay drove digital transformation efforts as a member of the Information Management Council and was also the executive sponsor of GE's Veteran Network. Prior to GE, Clay held multiple leadership roles at the Boeing Company. Clay served 5 years in the United States Coast Guard, where he held numerous leadership positions. He also holds a bachelor's degree in computer science, engineering, and an MBA from the University of Texas. I recently caught up with Clay in his office in Bentonville, Arkansas, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Clay shared the ways in which Walmart ensures its employees and executives have the right skills and mindset to keep pace with accelerating technology change. Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as Clay discussed how effective prioritization begins with a deep understanding of the customer and the business. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Clay discussed how the unification of back office technology and shared services enable him to more effectively improve internal operations and empower the company's massive workforce. And finally, Principle 5, external partnerships, as Clay discussed how Walmart accelerates innovation by partnering with academic institutions and startups. We also discussed key elements of a healthy culture, the most valuable lessons Clay has learned through his career, and how Walmart is leveraging artificial intelligence across the business. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are, one, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. Two, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. Three, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. Four, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And five, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's 1 day a week or full time, be included within their offer packages.
Clay Johnson, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter.
Clay, I wanted to begin with your current role at Walmart. You're the Chief Information Officer and Executive Vice President of Global Business Services. I wonder if you could take a moment and describe your purview that is encompassed in the two aspects that I've just described in your title.
Yeah, so what happened was earlier in the year when I joined, one of the things that we did at Walmart was we took all the internal technology and we took all the shared services and put those teams together. And let me describe a little bit about what that is. When I say internal technology, it's basically anything that runs internally to the company. And I think there's a component that we split out is all the e-commerce and customer-facing stuff to Jeremy King, which is our CTO. And basically everything is internal that runs kind of the machine for the company. And that's everything from cybersecurity, all your corporate systems. We're doing a lot of stuff with machine learning, analytics, artificial intelligence. Anything that runs inside the company, I handle. And a lot of that is obviously, it's not necessarily customer facing, but it's supplier facing. So we did a lot of stuff with the suppliers too. And then on the shared services side, what we did is we combined, put that into and put these together. The shared services, basically everything is transactional for the company. So if you think about traditional shared services, it's all your financial transactions. It's all your HR transactions, procurement. We have call center in there. And right now we have 8 different shared service sites around the globe. So we have them in Mexico, Costa Rica, Brazil, the UK, and a few in the United States. And the idea was to put all this together is how do you create a more efficient machine? And at first, when I first started looking at this, it was kind of like, okay, I kind of get it, but I'm not really, really sure. I mean, I've seen other companies. I think Peter, probably one of the more famous companies done this was Procter & Gamble, back in the day under Fleet's remit. And I knew there was something there, but until you really get a chance to see it and understand the actual power of putting these two together, where you actually start to drive a lot more end-to-end ownership, where you can take technology and infuse it all the way through the process, that's really where you start getting the power of putting those kind of two organizations together. I think you're going to see a trend of more companies do this.
That's very interesting. And I know that part of the intention was to have a unified view for associate experience. And I wonder if you could take a moment to just describe that, how that's enhanced through digital technologies.
Yes. So if you think about, for me, it's about the relentless focus on the customer. And for me, the customer is actually the internal associate for the company. So you think about anytime we can impact the, 2+ million associates we have in the company, that's a huge number. And anytime you can help, productivity numbers or interact with the different tools that we have. And the reason we're so focused on it is if you look at the, over the years, a lot of the consumer technology has really bled into the business world. If you look back probably, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, the business technology was better than the consumer technology. But now it's actually flipped where a lot of the consumer technology stuff that you use at home is actually better than what you have in the business. So people are now expecting that when they come to work, like, hey, they want the stuff to work like a Facebook. They want the stuff to work like a Twitter. They want everything on mobile. They want everything right at the tip of their fingers. And that's the experience that we're looking to provide the internal associates for the companies, how they get everything right at the tip of their fingers, from the analytics to, the tools that they can use to help them make themselves more productive. You think about 2+ million people, that's a big number. So, the efficiency we're trying to drive is big.
I'm curious also, just given this mandate that you have, the new role and so on, how much have you had to change just in terms or rethink the skill mix of your team? And a related question to that, I'm curious by how much this is that change has come through adding employees or retraining existing employees or just creative use of external parties.
Yeah, I've always thought, and this is something I've thought about for my whole career is and something I talk about a lot is people are your number one asset. And without the people and the talent, the organization has a very hard time moving forward. I think one of the things you got to do as a leader is make sure you put people in that are obviously smarter than you are. And I think that's a challenge for a lot of people. But it's something I've always tried to do is like, how do you get people in that continue to, change, continue to innovate, continue to think differently? And one of the things that we really started to do here was, as we think about as technology starts to evolve, how do we get the right people in the right roles? So as technology is evolving, how do we bring that into the company? Kind of the consumer grade type technology things I was talking about. How do we continue to bleed that into the company? If you look at the paces with technology changing companies, it's happened a lot rapidly than probably in the last couple of decades, where now the technology is forcing companies to change every couple of years. And if you don't have the right leadership in place, it's going to be very, very hard for us to move forward. You just look in the last couple of years with mobile analytics, with artificial intelligence, it's completely changed how companies think and how companies do analytics, how companies interact with customers. So having the right people in the right roles is absolutely critical. And for me, it's about, getting the people in the roles, upskilling, bringing in some external talent. But at Walmart, one of the things we have some really, really good talent through the company. And we've started setting up some, pockets of innovation across the country. We have some here in Bentonville. We have people in the New York City area with our JET acquisition. Then we have people in California with the e-commerce team. We've recently stood up some capabilities in Dallas and Austin. So we're really focused on people. And those are the ones that are really going to help us move forward. I mean, like I said, talent, people are your number one asset.
You mentioned you think of your customer as the associates across the organization. You also mentioned there are 2 million of them and growing. How do you get a sense of the needs of such a vast population of associates?
Yeah, it's extremely hard. So one of the things that I did right out of the gate when I joined the company, I really set the focus on three core things was meeting as many people as I could, learning the business, and learning all the projects that are people working on. So the piece about learning the business, that's where you really start to prioritize. So I went out and did a lot of people's jobs. So I sat in the shared service centers and did people's work. I sat down with the different technology teams and really kind of like a day in the life and understood what they did every day. That helps you start to really prioritize the things that you need to do to impact the company. Then you hear really from firsthand or actually using it yourself of like, hey, here are the things that we can really do to change the company. How do we interact with the tools? How do we make things more digital? How do we really completely change the way people work? But you can't do it unless you've been out to experience how people work. And I spent a lot of the, and I still do it now, probably the first 6 months, a lot focused in on learning how people worked. And I still go by and spend time with them. And every time I'm there, I learn something new when I'm out working with the teams. And I've done a lot of store visits, working with them, understanding the operations, distribution centers. And, you know, Peter, something I think I might have told you this before, but it's something I learned really early on in my career. It's about you really have to know the business better than business. If you're going to be able to think about change or impacts to it, it's hard to make it unless you really don't understand how the things operate. And understanding your customer and understanding the business are really key things that I think, you know, all leaders should focus on and sometimes gets missed.
A lot of what you're describing really suggests a degree of cultural change at a minimum within the group that you're leading. And I'm curious how you think about that. Obviously, in some ways, cultural change is one of the most difficult to enact since it's trying to change people's behaviors and the way they do things and, you know, moving their cheese, so to speak, which might create a degree of angst or uncomfort. How have you thought about the cultural change that you're ushering in?
Yeah, I think the culture is one of the, I mean, to me, Peter, is probably the foundational element to any company. And I think you can't get that mixed up with the values of the company. So if you think about like, you know, from Walmart and, you know, the things that the founders always put in is you're always going to have those foundational elements of the company. But one of the things that has to continually evolve is the culture. And you know, you think about where we are now as a company and how we're competing in e-commerce and how we're looking and bringing into a lot of different technologies. The underlying culture and the people are the two components that can really make or break a company. And when I think about culture, I think about really four things. And I talk about these actually a lot in my town halls with other people. The first is what I talk about a lot, and I'm very much like this, is transparency. I think you have to be completely transparent with your teams. And I think when you bring into at least my level of transparency, I'm just like, people worry about being over transparent. I don't know if there is such a thing. I think there's a line where being you know, fully transparent, but I think there's also a line where you got to be transparent and let people know what the heck's going on so people can see your vision, but people also feel comfortable about approaching you. That's the first thing I think about in culture. Second thing, which I push a lot on, is really having the open debates and conversations. I think that's a very important thing that you have within the team is making sure everybody can have a debate and challenge each other. But when they leave the room, they also got to continue to be peers, friends, and, you know, all of us work together. But I've learned if you can have the discussion and open debate and challenge each other, you're always going to get the right answer. And I think that's a big culture thing that a lot of companies don't have, which is important. That way you can get the answer. Otherwise, you're going to get to a passive-aggressive behavior where everybody agrees and nobody agrees. They leave the room and the debate starts again. The third thing for me is really around, does everybody feel comfortable speaking up? And it kind of goes back to the transparency thing. Do people feel like they can bring ideas forward? Can they bring issues forward? But can they speak up and feel like their voice is heard? And then the actual issue either gets fixed or the idea gets bubbled up and we do something with it. And the last thing for me is really the fail fast model. And something I really learned at GE more than anything. So it's probably the fourth one's probably newer for me. The other three I've had and kind of used for a while and carried on through different companies I've worked for. But the fail fast model is extremely important for me, and I talk a lot about that, but make sure people are comfortable with failure. That's something that a lot of us have a hard time with, including myself, but you got to feel comfortable that, you know, not everything's going to work, and you got to be able to fail fast, iterate, and continue to change, and making sure that that the organizations feel comfortable with that. So when people do fail, you nearly need to reward that. Where in the past, a lot of times people have failed, and this is not at any specific company, but just in general, that anytime people fail, everybody comes down on it. It's like, oh my God, that was a failure. It didn't work. I think it should be the other way around where you got to celebrate those failures. Because if you learn from those failures, those are the ones that are typically going to get you ahead. So those are the big four things for me when I think about culture And I think transparency probably being number one. That's why I put it number one, is from an important standpoint.
Your responsibilities also include increasing IT efficiency and also improving processes. And this actually harkens back to the point you made a moment ago, Clay, that as CIO, you need to understand the business better than the business itself. And that includes the processes that guide the business. Can you talk a little bit about some of your efforts just in terms of IT efficiency and process improvement and ways in which you and your team are fulfilling those objectives?
Yeah, we're actually doing two big things. The first one is we're moving to a product model. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, how in the heck do you move a product model? Well, if you think about a product, Peter, a lot of the, think about an iPhone or an iPad, right? That being a product, how do you take that same concept on building a product and how do you bring it internally to a company to be able to drive more efficiency? So now you have this kind of end-to-end ownership. You have this single-threaded ownership model where people actually own something and there's the output to it. And they own all the components that go with it. If you look at traditional IT or corporate IT through a lot of companies and including here, what you see is a lot of fragmentation where there are a lot of people that own a lot of different things, but there's not necessarily one owner that owns the true output of it. And they truly own the decision rights to be able to make calls when improving the process, you know, shutting the system down, putting a new one in to give more efficiencies. But putting that product model in is something we've been working on probably for the last about 5 or 6 months. And we've actually started implementing it in pockets now, and we'll roll that fully out in the early February time where we'll have, we'll stand up a lot of different products. The first one would be like, for example, around finance. So, you know, corporate IT, you're always going to have a finance function in there that supports the finance group. But now we'll have finance where we'll have all the process owners in there. We'll have all the technology, and then we'll obviously have all the support and services to go with it. Before that was a lot of different groups and people. And that's part of the power, Peter, of putting technology and services together. Now we can drive full end-to-end ownership across the board. And the key piece to this is once you put in the product model, how do you drive now efficiencies in the processes? And one of the things we're starting to do is a lot with process automation. So using a lot of artificial intelligence to drive a lot of the process automation through these efficiencies. I think this year we put in about 500 different bots into our world. So bots being a lot of the artificial intelligence pieces to drive a lot more of the automation efficiencies through these processes. And again, that goes back to the power of having technology and shared services together. Now you can use the technology to drive a lot of the process improvement through things like product model, end-to-end ownership, and more importantly, using a lot more of the advanced technologies like artificial intelligence to change a lot of that from an efficiency standpoint.
We talked a bit about the size of the overall team at Walmart, the 2 million strong. Your team, if I understand correctly, is 5,000 associates globally. And I wonder, how do you think about governing that work? You've talked about the move to the product model, for example, which impacts some of them. But how do you set the priorities? How do you put 5,000 people to work and ensure that they're productive on a daily basis?
Yeah, Peter, good question. The actual team is a little over 10,000 when you put in the technology and the shared services. So it's a little over 10,000 people.
Understood. Thank you.
The key to this is kind of what I went back to earlier around prioritization is two things. Understanding your customer. In this case, it's the internal component, but also learning the business. I think it goes back to those foundational elements is, from a prioritization standpoint, things I was talking about a minute ago, how do you apply the AI and the machine learning to those business processes? If you don't understand the business, it's kind of hard to do that. So I think it's really a key thing about what are the important things that are going to help change the business. And you can spend a lot of time with the leaders or the CEOs of those businesses understanding, where they're trying to take it and how you can help enable them to drive a lot more of the efficiencies, drive better revenue, and in that case, increase sales margins and everything else. And I think technology has become a catalyst for a lot of that now, where 5-10 years ago, technology was nearly kind of looked at as a back office component. Now I think they're actually the enabler for a lot of the businesses. And that's why you're starting to see such an emphasis and focus on, technology. And, going back to this team here, putting shared service and technology together, I think is a proof point that technology can really enable and unlock a lot of value for the business. And at the end, really the customer too.
Very, very interesting. You also referenced earlier that you have teams in places like New York supporting the former Jet folks in Silicon Valley and Dallas. You've got a number of emerging technology teams as well, presumably working on some of the things you've already mentioned, like AI and machine learning and some of the technology that you've used to improve processes. Can you talk a bit about how that group works, how you have them focus on or even determine which areas of technology to focus on as they're exploring how emerging technology might apply to the priorities and strategies of the organization more generally?
Peter, so we have, like I said earlier, I mean, we have the, Hoboken, which is part of our JET acquisition with California. We have Bentonville, which is one of our really core sites. And then we've stood up some recent places in Dallas and Austin. And we have some, in other parts of the world in India, obviously with Bangalore. I think one of the things when I look at the innovation is how do you keep up with the pace and change in technology? I think you always have to figure out where you can get the best talent at. And if you look at what we have in Bentonville, we have some phenomenal talent here that really understand the business and obviously understand a lot of the processes that go with it. And how do you supplement that in different locations where you see pockets of innovation starting to start up? And one of the things that we did with Dallas was a lot of the other corporations started moving in. How do you move in that area? How do you partner with academics and kind of learn from some of the other bigger corporations that are potentially in the area? Then if you look at like Austin, where you have a lot of startups, how do you take the startup world, the corporate world, and then the Bentonville headquarters and put all that together really to create a super efficient machine that's putting out the latest and greatest type technologies from, all your machine learning, artificial intelligence. We started doing a lot of work around IoT and in impacting the actual energy inside the stores around sensors and refrigeration management. And coming from GE, I was like, okay, IoT, a super passionate space of mine. And when I first came to Walmart, I was like, IoT, like, how does that work? Like, I'm thinking more on the manufacturing side. And if you look at Walmart's footprint just in the US, we have over 5,000 stores. And if you look at that, think about energy consumption, think about the opportunity if you can actually apply a lot of the Internet of Thing concepts and analytics to that footprint, we have a chance to really move the needle from sustainability to food waste around refrigeration. So we're able to monitor a lot of the stuff there around sensors. So if they go out, we're able to, send the trouble ticket, get the stuff repaired instantly before anybody really knows anything's happened or the food's gone bad. So taking a lot of those kind of concepts and using them in a lot of these different analytics and labs that we're starting to stand up, we're able to really do some cool things that impact the customer, but really just change, Walmart in general with a lot of the machine learning and, the automation of processes. And I think having these different innovation hubs, we're going to continue to learn and the hubs could change. And I think it goes back to the thing I was talking about earlier around transparency, being transparent with the teams and, things are going to change. Technology is always going to change. And, the hubs could too at the same time. And I think the ability for people to be part of this whole machine and process where we have Bentonville, Dallas, Austin, New York, California all working together, is super important. It's kind of part of the culture that we're trying to drive around openness, innovation, and everything. So I'm excited. And so far, we're starting to see some really goodness out of it.
That's fantastic. You've worked for a number of really iconic brands, including Walmart, of course, but prior to that, Boeing, who's celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, GE, 125, 26-year-old company, Walmart now 55 years old. Each of them, as I say, iconic brands, leaders in their industry. And especially in your time in GE, you had a significant leadership role, not only at GE Power, but also as part of GE's Information Management Council. You had a big role to play in GE's digital strategy as well. And I wonder, what have you learned from now working across a couple of multiple different organizations and been one of the catalysts to changing the organizations from more traditional ways of doing business, so to say, to digital business. I'm wondering what sorts of lessons you've drawn from that across these.
Peter, I stepped back a little bit further in my career, if you don't mind, because I think it's important if you look at kind of where I started, because it really drives a lot of the foundational pieces that bring me to where I am today. Yeah, because, I started in college, had no idea what I wanted to do, and then joined the Coast Guard. Spent 5 years in the Coast Guard. And, each place I've worked at, I've always, taken something away. And I think, when I joined the Coast Guard, I didn't know what I really wanted to do. But, after I left, I left with some really kind of key thinkings. And the biggest one for me was around teamwork. And, you know, how to work as a team. It's not about the individual, but it's more about the team. And a lot of people that come out of colleges or and the colleges are focused a lot of times, except for one project at the end around a capstone, they're all focused about the individual, right? Okay, you got to make an A, you got to make a B, but it's always about your work. Where in the military it was completely different, where everybody had to work as a team and you're always around people you didn't know. The people were always getting rotated in and out. So the environment was very ambiguous. You learn to work in a top environment, you learn to work with a team. So if you take the Coast Guard, it was really the teams concept really started the foundation of my career. And then I got out of the Coast Guard, went to college, and the first place I went to work at was FedEx. One of the lessons I learned, you know, from FedEx was what I'd said earlier, was you have to know the business better than the business. I was thrown into a project early on, and the project, when we went to launch it at one of the ramps, failed miserably because none of us went to take the time to go learn the business. We thought we made an assumption how the business worked, and it wasn't even close to how it worked. And when we put it to work, it was a miserable, miserable failure. So kind of two takeaways from FedEx was know the business, but, you know, also learn from your failures. I think that was the key. And then, you know, getting into, you know, Boeing, one of the things that I learned was really around kind of globalization, how to work in a global environment. It's a extremely global company that works all parts of the world. And, you know, Boeing has a very complex machine when it comes to that. But the piece that I left really with Boeing was is the kind of the global environment. But then you weave in the other concepts with teamwork, learning the business, getting out and understanding how manufacturing works a lot better. Just understanding how the business operates in a global environment. And then at GE, I think one of the things that I learned the most, and I said earlier, was fell fast. That was one of the, I think, nearly the turning points for me in a career is something I didn't really take early on was failure. And I think that's something that GE taught me a lot about was, especially as you go through this digital transformation, you're going to fail a lot or you have to be comfortable with it. Otherwise, you're not going to survive. If you look at a lot of these companies, you know, that you mentioned from, you know, 100 year celebration for Boeing, 125 for GE, the reason they've been around for so long is because they've been willing to reinvent and they've been willing to fail. And that's what companies, you know, have to do. And very few companies have a second or third act. And I think what you're seeing right now is Walmart's in that same piece where we are learning from failure. We're reinventing. We're competing in the e-commerce space. We're doing things that we would have never probably done 5 or 10 years ago. And think about those fail fast models. You're starting to see that play in at Walmart a lot because in a digital transformation, the speed that things are changing, you have to do that. Like if you're not comfortable with failure, like you need to go somewhere else because a lot of companies that don't get comfortable with that are not going to make it.
Well, Clay Johnson, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks, Peter. I really enjoyed it and look forward to talking again.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.